Hello and welcome back to another edition of Indiepocalypse Radio, coming at you again every Saturday, or pretty much every Saturday. Am I going to not be here next Saturday? But I am going to be here next Saturday. But the following Saturday, I will not be here again, going out to the markets, as they say. And who is this going out to the markets? I'm Andrew. I am the host of Indiepocalypse Radio, that being the kind of chill out, hang out radio portion of Indiepocalypse, the monthly indie game alternative collection that just came out yesterday, a newest edition, 46. This is a show where we kind of hang out and we talk to people in primarily the Indiepocalypse space, but sometimes the broader game development space, sometimes even the broader art space. But here we're in the broader non-Indiepocalypse family, as I'm trying to branch out more and just like, what if you just DM people and be like, hey, you want to be on the show? And they often say yes. And one of those people who said yes, you may know from their work on the tentatively upcoming, I don't know how you say that sort of thing, in the indie space, the done when it's done space with Spirit Swap. It's Alex. Alex, hello. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Yeah, it's coming soon, TM.
Yes.
Eventually. Yeah, well, it's gonna happen for sure. Not really sure when.
Eventually, video games have to be finished, you know.
Yeah, finished or canceled, and we don't have a publisher, so
right. You can't lay yourself off.
Or I guess no, I've tried many right. times. It's not working out for me.
I guess you can just quit. I guess that's laying yourself off. But
no, I can't, especially not with a Kickstarter. I feel like that's one of those things where it's right. like, yeah.
Well, they from those nice little warnings I get from Kickstarter, they tell me these are not pre-orders. So technically, you could just be like, see you, folks.
Technically, I know, but yeah. It feels so bad. It feels so bad when people are like, here you go. We trust you. Do your thing and be creative and make the game that you've always wanted to make. And I go, thanks. Bye.
Yeah, no, I've... As someone who went out today to mail something, because I get obsessed with, like, even though I'm a person like, oh, I need to mail things out on release date, they need to be out perfectly, even though it's like, would people care if it was like not immediately sent out?
But okay, yeah. Dude, here's okay. I don't know how you like crowdfund things, but for me and what I found for a lot of people in our space, when we crowdfund something, we do it because we like the creators, and we don't really like, I don't care if I get something back from a Kickstarter, I'm very happy, but most of the time it doesn't really matter. It feels like more of a bonus. If it never comes out, it never comes out, you know what I mean? Like, especially under capitalism, like, it's like we all got circumstances.
I have not Kickstarted a video game in a very long time, or crowdfunded it. What was the last, I don't remember, what was the last video game that I attempted to crowdfund? And did they ever, did any of them ever come out? I think the answer is no. No, this is one, I think.
See, now you're making me think about it.
I think I backed Radio.
I think it was Time Spinner. Oh, did that come out?
I think it's coming out. It seems like it is. I did. I also bet. Backed Octodad as my first one back in the day, and I still have a...
Are you serious?
Yeah, I have an Octodad plush hanging around somewhere in my in my house. I've been around the indie for a long time.
Yeah, man, remember when Octodad was indie then? Yes. I mean, they're still indie, but
You know, in the broadest sense, in the way that whatever, Wes Anderson is indie, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, technically, yeah.
It's that same...
Do you ever feel like the term indie is so broad that it doesn't really mean anything anymore? It's more like a vibe.
Yeah, it's why when I talk about things, I use alternative a lot now. Sometimes I dip into underground because I feel like those are getting the vibe of what I'm going for.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially since people have like a certain sense of like what indie means now, like. Especially as like publishers kind of co-opt vibes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of like these double A or triple I publishers, like, okay, I'm a bit of a purist, and like, I don't want to like get into the like no true Scotsman Discord. Yes. But for me, if you have a fucking publisher who's giving you millions of dollars, should you be really calling yourself indie? I mean, you are literally dependent on... your publisher. Right.
You can have funding canceled. And...
Yeah, like I don't know. Maybe that's why I was saying like indie feels more like a vibe now. Yeah. It's more like it's a small game that is not triple A.
I've been trending towards the term budgeted a lot more. That's kind of like
what do you mean by budgeted?
Like, do you have a like I for instance do not have a budget. My budget is like my bank account, and same for like I think most indie, like most the quote-unquote itch.io dev does not have a budget. They make games.
No, that makes total sense. Yeah, I like that.
But if you can like hire staff and pay people a salary and a wage, that's like you're like a budgeted dev.
Yeah. Man, a salary.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. No. I got so wistful about
salaries. Even I'm wistful about salaries, sort of. But I like being hourly because it means when 4 o'clock rolls around, you know what else rolls around? It's my feet out the door.
Hell yeah.
I'm out of this place and heading straight home. But we've been talking a lot about games nebulously. If people aren't familiar, what is a spirit swap more specifically?
So Spirit Swap is kind of my love letter and my team, like not just me, but yeah. The concept is a deep love for Panel de Pon, which became Tetris Attack in the US, which became Planet Puzzle League, Pokemon Puzzle League. I really love these like action, like competitive match three puzzlers.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to bring back like the aesthetic that the further they penetrated into like the North American market, I felt like they completely lost, which is like the cutesy, very feminine, very magical girl style of the original Panel de Pon, I want to say 1994.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I wanted to make. And when we were making our studio, Soft Not Weak, me at the time and my two roommates, we were like, okay, we need a simple game that we can finish in a few months.
Yes.
Just.
I didn't realize
you can see
this.
Where this is going.
I didn't realize you started Spirit Swap this year.
Yes. Oh my God. No, it's. Oh, I don't even. I'm going to laugh because I don't want to cry. But yeah, it was right. Like, what would be like a really quick thing we can make together? 3 months tops, get the idea going, see how we work together, see how. And that was October 2019.
Yeah. Which you predate even me.
I know, it's so stupid.
It's it's like, but that is like a scale of like game development. You know, that's not that bad. It's like, look, whenever you see those indie smash hits come out, and then it's like, what was it? I always confuse these two. Which one was the time loop one? Was that Outer Wilds?
Was it Outer? Yeah, I think it's
okay because it was that Outer Worlds came out around the same time, and I played neither of them, and I forget both of them. Which one is which constantly?
I think it's Outer Wilds. I think you're right. I didn't play them either, but I watched all my friends play Outer Wilds
but
and
I remember
go crazy about it
when Outer Wilds came out, and then like IndieKey was like, "Congratulations to Outer Wilds!" Are like it was something like 2011 IndieKey finalists or something, and I was like,
"You're kidding!"
It was some ridiculous amount of time, like. Either approaching or over a decade. And I'm like, yeah, this is, but people don't have like that. We were talking this in like the pre-show sort of also, but like people don't have a sense of like what it takes to make indie games, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah. Especially on like whatever scale, honestly, I don't know if like you do any other type of art, that isn't video games, but like even drawing for me, the hardest thing when I'm drawing is finishing something. It is literally the hardest part of any project is like being like, and it's done.
Yeah, right. It's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I can, especially like, I think digital has made it a lot of worse in some ways because you can, I'll just add another layer or
undo.
Yeah. It feeds like in that kind of like cruel iteration. Mentality.
Yeah, the tyranny of having options. It sucks. I love it. I love making art. It sucks.
But then you're like, if I was just putting ink on paper, I can't control Z my ink. I'm just stuck.
Yeah.
With this thing.
Then it just sucks forever.
Yeah. Then you have.
Yeah.
No, I think about that. That like Magic the Gathering with a weird pen stroke or whatever that's just on the back of the card.
It's so good. Like, I love that shit. That's the thing. Like, I really wish we could lean into just making shit that is not perfect.
Right.
Not even good. Like, that's, like, one thing I struggle with a lot, and probably why Spirit Swap has taken as long as it has, or, like, a big reason why, is that I can't let myself put out something that I'm not at least proud of. Yeah. You know what I mean? And pride is such a fucking poison. It right. feels like... It sucks. It's like, just make... You know when you're a kid and you're just, like, fucking drawing and you're like, hell yeah, this is a stick figure that looks like ass and now I'm going to put it on, you know, the wall. Or right. It's just, you're just making shit. And then that's really, that's like the catch-22 of making art, is that the more you make shit, the better you get at making shit. But we are, like, also, and including myself, I literally have, like, this paralysis of, like, what if I make it and it's not good and other people witness it with their eyes? Have I offended them forever?
Right.
Are they never going to trust me again if I make something that is less than exactly correct?
Yeah. And I think the internet is, like, exacerbated that to, like, the worst degree, because it feels like, oh, we all have to agree. Consensus. We all need to agree that this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I mean, anyone on social media feels that. You probably feel yeah. that too. Like, if yeah. the thing I put all my love into, I put out there, and then nobody looks at, was it worth it? And the answer should be yes.
Yes, yeah. No, I started off in my, like, my postmortem of last year, declaring 2023 is going to be my laid back year, and it's, like, helped a lot.
Hell yeah! How did it work out?
Oh, it's great. I, like, no longer care in positive way, kind of way, you know, where I used to, like,
yeah.
I used to obsess over, like, why can't I get even 100 shares on Twitter.com? I don't think I ever reached 100 shares for release. And I'll be like, oh, all these people are constantly talking about indie games. Why don't they talk about this thing that's clearly in there, what they're talking about? Then I'm like, who cares?
yeah. No, it's honestly really poison. I mean, I didn't even know about Indiepocalypse until literally, like, last year.
Yeah,
I feel like around 2022, like, it is completely up my alley, which is, like, the really fucked up thing is, like, you always, like, whenever I stop and go, like, why isn't anybody doing X? It turns out someone was doing yeah. X all along, sometimes. But I just did not find them. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's been doing X for a decade or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so fucking frustrating. And also it happens when we were making Spirit Swap, where I was like, why is no one making Panel the Pawn likes? And then I discovered Panel Attack and I was like, never mind.
Or like, oops, I was like, you see that there's so much. Like, I thought you were going to say Pedal Crash.
Pedal Crash. No, I mean, like, yeah. Panel Attack is, like, online, multiplayer, and, like, modded, like, by a community. Like, I'm not going to say open source because I don't think it's open source.
Right.
But it is, like, a huge project that has been running for years and years and years. And, like, Pedal Crash is awesome. And I think aren't they releasing Pedal Crash 2?
Something,
man,
like
Pedal
that.
Crash fucking rules. Yeah, they're really good. Like, there's so many, like, games out there that until, like, I thought I was, you know, like, the God come again of, like, I am just going to remake Panel the Pawn, but make it gay. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize was there just because, I don't know, like, a part of me is, like, I didn't do the research
but
before
also,
like, I needed to.
You can't research the whole internet.
Yeah, like, how do you find that? Like, especially with, like, yeah, like, don't get me on my soapbox about, like, the death of Google and, like, the yeah. usability of search engines and all of that. But it feels really hard to find shit. And I'm not sure if it's because there's so much more shit to wade through, or we're being, like, deliberately obfuscated from anything that isn't, like, sponsored.
Oh, yes. The search results are definitely much worse. And like, I think... social media is the same kind of, like, double-edged sword of that. Mm-hmm. Was like, I think it makes discovery, like, way worse. And I don't even think it's just, like, algorithms. Cause I was thinking, like, what's better? Would I rather trade an algorithm for, you know, being found by an algorithm versus being found by a popular user? And I don't think either of them is preferable to me, you know?
Yeah, no, that makes total fucking sense. It's really weird because yes, I want a curated space, which yeah. you know, ostensibly is what algorithms are supposed to be doing. And I put, like, 14 quotation marks around yeah. that. But also, I would like human curation. I do not fucking want a machine that looks at like the things that anger me the most, because that's how what we react to the most, then gives me more of that. Like
no, not using Twitter at all. And then when I like, I basically just log on if someone sends me a message, and so it defaults to the For You page, and I always get a glimpse of like some like utterly bizarre like drama that's blown up within some subculture, and it's like I don't have anything to do with, you know, amateur slot cars. Why am I getting a piece of slot car drama?
Well, now you looked at it, so you're gonna get more. Enjoy. It's like the whole like the joke of like Amazon's algorithm being like, you bought a toilet seat, here's an ad for 14 other toilet seats. It's you're like right. No, it's what,
why would I? Yes, no, I, oh, I mean, I do have 14 toilets. So
okay, you know what? That's a you thing. Like I don't that's just you.
It's the benefits of living the high life of high life of publishing or whatever.
Big alt games money. Yes, delicious.
Rolling in alt games money. Can't get enough of it. That's why I don't get accepted into indie game little places, cuz I have too much money.
Yeah. It wouldn't be ethical.
Yes, right. It's like too big a publisher to allow into this. I don't think you really know much about experimental games to be involved in this workshop, perhaps.
Yeah, you're right. You're
not at all. Anyway, that's just me. I have no beef with any particular sort of thing. Because I also realized that's the other thing of running events. You have to realize events and publications where it's like, oh no, these things also have to like make money and build an audience, and a unknown public, an unknown little thing does not benefit them. So why would they feature it?
Yeah, almost like we need art grants and, you know, financing for the arts. But
yeah,
it's okay. I hear they have it in Europe.
No, the one time I was showing games at like a gaming kind of event in Canada, they were like, people thought I was Canadian, so they were telling me about art grants. I'm like, I'm an American. I don't have those.
Oh, my God. Yeah, when we started Soft Not Weak and we were like, this is going to be a cooperative, and we started looking for grants, we found, like, so many grants, and they were all in Canada. It was so frustrating.
Just take a little trip top the border and just head over to old Canada.
They were literally saying shit like, are you a video game cooperative looking to get started? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, guess what? As a Canadian. And I'm like, never mind. All right, cool.
I did a show at a museum once, and that was the closest I got. And it was great because they paid me to go there. And also,
hell yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and they paid my travel too.
Like what?
Yeah, when I was leaving, like it was a paid spot there. And then as I was talking to the curator, she was like, "Oh wait, you're not from Ohio, are you?" I'm like, "No, I'm from Mass." And she was like, "Oh, send me your receipts for your travel. We'll comp them for you."
That's so nice.
It's just like museums, they have money. They have money for funding arts. It's not like
wow.
Like PAX or whatever, huh. Where it's like, I'm going to pay $2,000 to go.
I mean, we did PAX together, and we still had to, like, we didn't have to pay anything to PAX, but, like, you know, you need supplies and everything.
Right.
And, like, your controllers. You need to basically bring everything except the booth for PAX together. No, not PAX together. PAX Rising.
Right. That's the good one to get into.
Yeah, it was really good. Honestly, it was mind-blowing. Like, I didn't expect it to be, as for me, life-changing, but like given that we started in 2019 and we didn't have anything to show until 2020, we've basically always developed the game in like the pandemic sort of mindset even now. So when we got into PAX Rising, that was the one time where we were like, okay, we're going to be super careful, but we are going to do this because it feels like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And the best thing about PAX Rising was the people playing the game and then coming back like the next day or like bringing their friends. That was, dude, that was so fucking life changing. Right. I was like hiding to cry. I was so fucking happy. I was like, okay, so I'm not crazy. Cause you know, you work on a thing for so long. You're like, okay, well the people who tell me they love it are my friends. So they're probably just lying to me.
Right.
And then Yeah, you know,
I have the same mentality where like people who have adopted, who like got in early enough, I no longer trust their it's bad as
but
it
you're
sounds.
Wrong.
Yeah,
yeah, I know it sounds bad, but like that's how it feels like, right? You're like, oh, whatever I make, whatever garbage I make, right, you're gonna tell me you love it just right, because you're nice to me, and
right,
it's like,
I paid you to be in this thing, of course you like this thing.
Yeah, of course you like this thing. It's, yeah, and it's honestly a little bit, it was like a shock to my system to realize how many, like, strangers that I hadn't paid or wasn't friends with right, were just kind of showing up to be like, hey, this actually fucking rules, and I really needed that to, like, be able to push the game into, like, that final phase of, like, okay, let's get it out there.
Alex, it's almost as if most of the kind of like online hype culture is based around who you're friends with and whether or not you have advertising money.
What? No. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's almost as if people's favorite indie games are the ones that are popular and the ones that my friends made.
Yep. No. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Which
isn't
like,
yeah,
That sounds catty, but it's not a value judgment. Of course you should promote the stuff your friends like.
I mean, I think it's good until it becomes like a click thing. Yeah. Like, I do think like we owe it to each other as like smaller creators and to uplift each other, especially when we feel like we're doing something like interesting or different or important. But also it's just not really feasible a lot of the time just because, you know, people have limited attention, quote unquote. And also you're fighting an algorithm and all of those things. But it's nice. Like, dev communities that support each other are really, really, really nice. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have anything very deep to say. No. I just think it's nice when people support each other.
Yeah, it's the simpler. It's like, it's why I have my strict no repeats policy, you know. So to avoid this becoming like a click of, oh, it's all the same devs in this thing again.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know you had that policy. That's actually really cool.
Yeah, it was a soft policy. I was like, I had no repeats until 6 months, but that was me thinking, like, surely this will catch on and there'll be other collections. There are not still, at least with any kind of, you know, regularity that would be considered to be
attraction. Like attraction. I'm gonna honestly convince my friend who keeps saying, I really wanted to do what Indiepocalypse is doing.
Yeah.
I can't believe he did it first, to be like, no, you should also do it, and you two should collaborate. I think that'd be cool.
I 100% did not do it first. I mean, I'm sure there are other indie bundles as well, but I'm even just in terms of, I just stole this idea from Comic Anthologies. It's not a new idea.
But it's still, it is technically...
Right.
You were like, what if Comic Anthology, but games?
Right. So, the old but games spin.
It's every pitch. It's like the pitch deck where like you take something familiar and you change one thing, which, yeah.
What if Mario jumped sideways instead of up and down? Whoa.
Well, that's... Yeah,
now I'm thinking.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, that pitch means, but it uses a name people recognize.
It gets the people going.
Yeah, no, there's tons of space in this, like, to do, and, you know, plenty of people, I may or may not have recorded a panel with with five other people who have published similar projects who all do it, have a different approach to it, you know? Like, there's no, like...
Hell yeah.
It would be unlikely that someone else is going to... make the zine portion with the little booklet and the very specific way that I go about doing it.
Which is so good.
With the magazine aesthetic and just like, it's also really great for events. That's basically the reason I did it, to demo the thing at events, because how do you demo 10 games?
And that is, yeah, okay. Yeah, see, like you really thought that shit through. That's, you got that brain on you, Andrew. You're making it work.
I have to, I thought too much, this was for long, I mean, a lot of time it was me saying, somebody should do this, until I realized that nobody was going to do it, and I was like, well, I'll just do it. And
that's how I felt about, Paneled Upon. I was like, why is no one bringing this back? And then, oh, I forgot this part of the story. We started in 2019, and once it was too far in for it to, like, do anything, Nintendo was like, we're bringing back Paneled Upon for free.
Yeah.
On the Nintendo Switch Virtual Console, March 2020. Mark your calendars. And I was like,
Well now, okay. But now you're releasing to like the healthy Switch market where everything's on a Switch cart. I'm getting more Switch carts than ever.
No. Why are you saying that?
Yeah, no, that is. I don't know how hard it is to people should just be publishing on USB sticks. Too many consoles.
Honestly,
With
that would
little
be
thing.
so nice.
There's too much
Yeah.
absurdity of it. I highly recommend listeners, if you're an indie dev, USB sticks are super cheap. You can just put
Yeah,
stuff
they're
on
the
it.
future. Just
Yeah.
put shit on it.
Put it on it.
I mean, you're joking, but I do have games like when I buy collector's edition from like indie games. I don't remember the last one that I bought, but it was literally a case with a USB stick in it and a little booklet and a little cassette for
Yeah.
like the soundtrack. And I thought that was the coolest shit I had ever seen.
I've sold over 100 of those things at this point.
Hell yeah.
My little cassette case kind of releases that I highly encourage it as like just a form factor that I think indie dev should use because all of it put together is so inexpensive to produce. Like
Hell yeah.
cassette cases are cheap, USB sticks are cheap, the little covers are cheap because it's just
Are they
like the
really that cheap?
if you let's break down some USB sticks. I buy big ones. I buy like 8 gig ones, which the average indie dev won't need, but they're like maybe over $1 from AliExpress, and then like cassette cases are under $1, and the paper inserts are practically free. They're like 30 cents or
Yeah.
something.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So,
Huh, because I was looking into vinyls and I'm like, man, that shit is expensive. I
oh
don't know
yeah,
why. At no point was I like, cassettes are
yeah.
probably cheap.
Yeah, I don't know how much producing actual cassettes costs, but yeah, no, the form factor that I work in is maybe $2 per at most, plus
That's
a
so
little.
fucking cool.
Yeah,
So
it's.
wait, you just put like the USB stick inside it?
Yep, I just stick it in there. I just tape it to the inside of the cassette case and call it a day.
Okay, you tape it because I was like, doesn't it just like jingle around? Sorry, these are the
Yeah.
stupidest questions you
No,
ever hear. It's not
I
like,
like
wow, how
answering
do
very logistic questions because,
you...
like I said,
Oh, I love that. And then you have like the name of like the games on like the little fold, like foldy bit.
like
Oh, that's so
as like the
cool.
track listing. Yeah, and it folks, it also works. People love them at events. They go, they're
Hell
like,
yeah.
oh, these things are awesome, and it's how you can like sell. My proclamation of like. Towards the beginning of the pandemic was like, folks, when events start back up, we should all, if we could bring games to events, we should explicitly sell things. No one goes to events anymore and not sell games. It obviously did not happen.
Yeah. I don't even know where like, the stop is like for events are back or not back, 'cause I'm still over here like unless it's like a really, extenuating circumstance, I am staying my ass home
Yes.
and trying to like, yeah, it's
I worked from the beginning till last year within in the retail space. So
Oh.
I have a specific kind of brain rot, which is like, yeah, of course I'm going out in public. I did it every I did it for 40
Yeah.
hours every week. It just became
Yeah,
normal.
no. No, that makes total fucking
Only
sense. Yeah,
got it
no.
twice.
Damn. Oh my God, that's so scary.
Yeah,
Dude, I
and
just got the fucking booster and it knocked me out, like full body shivers, rags, like
yeah.
rolling around like I was possessed. And I was like, okay, so if I had caught this strain of COVID, it probably would have killed me.
Yeah, no, I only had it. I've never had it that bad, really. I got very fortunate with that, where it just never really hit me too hard. But the other added benefit is like I feel like people are finally like more accepting of like quote unquote sick time. People are more respecting of not going. Just like, oh, I'm not gonna go to work. I'm just gonna stay home if I'm sick, and I don't want sick people around me anymore.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. I just wear a mask everywhere now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's hard at events sometimes. It's been so long since I've done like a fully all day. I explained to me, I'm like, oh, I'm hoarse now. But with that said, we're approaching the end of our segment here. We ran a little long, but that's fine because so I have two important long-standing Indiepocalypse questions that I need to ask every guest that comes through these parts.
Okay.
What's your favorite type of rock, Alex?
I'm thinking about this deeply for some reason.
No. Take it.
So if you mean the music, I would definitely say progressive rock, like Stradivarius, like metal, progressive metal rock. If you're talking about like rocks, like in the ground, I really like pebbles that have been like super polished on the beach, like the ones that have like different colors in them. Yeah.
There is no specification. There is no specification. It's your interpretation of the question.
So both
perfectly acceptable answers. That almost itself is like a test to see which one people lean towards as their instinct of rock. But the follow up question, and these questions come from people who are asking them every single week, and then I decide to like, oh, I like to ask them. They're fun little questions to gauge things. And this one is importantly, this one is an optional question. It is, do you have a favorite Toho character?
I know nothing about Toho, but I like the witch character with like the blondish hair because it's in a Slay the Spire mod that I thought was great.
Marisa.
Yes, Marisa, thank you.
They have their, someone actually made a Slay the Spire Toho Slay the Spire entire game out of it. Or maybe,
is it not just like the mod, the Spire mod? That's like, yeah, it is the entire, like you can just play in Marisa's world and like meet the other Toho characters. It fucking rules.
I don't know. Is that the one with the very, it, when I first saw, I saw someone streaming at one point, it had a lot of good art on the cards.
It has really good fucking art. I mean, it's Toho, right? And then it has like its own mechanic. Like the character has its own mechanics.
Yes. Okay. So I think we are talking about the same thing. I knew it was Slay the Spire inspired. I didn't know if it was that it was built like on top of like modded on top of it.
If we're talking about the same thing, it's part of the mod the Spire content that you can find.
Who knows? We don't have forever to sit and think about.
Whatever it is, send it to me because I always want to play more Slay the Spire legs.
I played some of that like 3 days ago when I loaded up my Xbox account and I was like, what if I still have this installed? What if I play that? I'm like, no, I want to play new video games that I haven't played yet. So I'm doing a little bit of those, but speaking of video game, Alex, thank you so much for being here on the show and hanging out.
Thank you.
If people are looking for Spirit Swap or just anything you've got to send their way, where can people look for that?
I would say everything is on spiritswapgame.com, or if you're on Twitter for some godforsaken reason,
we are at softnotweek.
I will never say, you cannot pay me enough money to call it whatever that idiot's calling it. At SoftNotWeek is our account. So check out the game, and if you like it, and you may be intent to buy it someday, I would say wishlist it. Yes. If not, don't feel like you have to.
Or something I would do, I just kind of wishlist things because it takes 2 seconds to do.
I feel always weird being like, wishlist this even if you're never gonna fucking look at it. You know what I mean?
My mentality is I definitely wishlist it if I want it, but if I'm just kinda like, I'll wishlist it if I'm not signed in, I go, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's the defining factor. Do I have to sign in? Divide. Fuck it. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me here, Andrew. This is really fun.
Glad to have you on the show. This is my way of like, hey, I don't get to go to PAX or things like that, but devs should be able to hang out still.
One day we'll see each other at PAX or wherever else.
Yes. No, you never know. When I went to Toronto, there were like 10 Indiepocalypse devs there.
There you go.
I was overflowing with them. Thanks, Alex. Thank you for being here. We're going to go on a break now, and we'll be back with our next guest. So see you all, everyone else, on the other half of, like, I don't know, 1 minute and 18 seconds. Till then, goodbye. Hello, welcome back to Indiepocalypse Radio. That was Minutemen with themselves helping me out here as whenever I need be overdoing the Freddy. I highly recommend people take some time out of your day and look up. I think you just look up Do the Freddy. I think the cartoonist John Allison posted it at one point. I get mildly obsessed with it every now and then. It's transfixing. But anyway, we're back with our next guest, who you may know from this time in the apocalypse with issue 42, which sounds recent, but is now 4 issues ago. Now a quarter of a year ago. It's Adrian Valentin from Thunder Perfect Witchcraft. I almost said the name of the... I almost said the album.
All right, hello.
Hello. That is... does that happen often? Are you often conflated with the seminal current 93 album, Thunder Perfect Mind?
Basically, that's where the name came from. So if you're actually getting confused by British neo-folk artists, we don't really mind. I mean, we are basically also doing a little bit of music, so yeah.
Some time ago, the developer of Moonwings, he knew the album, but it's very rare that people know about this kind of music, so it isn't thematized very often, to be honest.
I can't believe people aren't regularly aware of Doom Folk and the work of David Tibet.
Definitely, yes, especially in the 21st century, right? Yes. I mean, what could be more current than a Doom, death, and folklore, I guess, an extremely weird folklore.
It's very, I do my part on this show to get people to listen to it.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
During my preamble.
At a time to find a slightly more weird theme song at the very beginning, I would
say. I have my specific theme song. Drinking Boys and Girls Choir.
That's also part of the vibe that I love, especially about the indie scene in general. Like, not only the punk vibe, but also the do-it-yourself vibes. I think you have discussed this prior, and I want to. It's such a shame that everyone is gone. I want to intersect actually in the discussion of what is indie and what is not, and the question whether or not indie is actually a vibe or not, or whether it is a special kind of, like, I don't know, a special way of producing video games. Because I feel like, yes, the term indie has lost quite a bit of meaning, and I absolutely loved, by the way, that you've taught it, that independent games which are actually funded, for example, by Sony, when we talk about the Outer Wilds, are not independent at all, because they literally depend on the money of others, right? And yes, I feel like we definitely have to think about how to relabel ourselves, especially when it comes to, like, I would say, larger events, when it comes to tagging and so on social media, because we also compete with video games that have a lot of marketing budget, that have a lot of reach, and I don't think we really do ourselves a favor here by still holding on to this indie thing, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Can you let go when I'm talking? I'm gonna drive myself mad.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Or lower your noise gate maybe. Will that work? Okay, thank you. Hello. Okay, yes. No, sorry, if I heard myself echo forever, I was going to go insane, because that means I get to hear my voice, and that's the thing I try to avoid.
Keeping the kind of topic of about Count 93, right?
Yes. I think part of it is indie, I think, has evolved as distribution models have changed, because plenty of people who used to be indie would make the things themselves, but then require a publisher to distribute it. Like, if you made an album, you couldn't just put it on Bandcamp. You needed, like, Warner to, like, sell it at record stores and stuff for you. Whereas
making music is not much different from making games. You encounter the very same problems with it. When I try to release an album, basically very, very few people care about it if I don't try to drag them onto the music, so to speak of. And it's very similar for our video games. So we have to make a lot of movement to get people seeing our games. We don't have the same channels. It's a different thing.
Yeah, and I highly recommend people actually return to the like to the roots and go back to like just go to your local events, you know, go to like small scale like local art fairs and zine fairs and like
definitely yes, and also going back a little bit more to the general haptic feeling also of physicality and of materiality as well. You were talking about this earlier when you're talking about USB sticks and actually distributing things made by hand. And this is something that we can do in the indie sphere that it's not that easily possible, I would say, for bigger publishers, because it is more of a risk and it is also kind of weird. It's also kind of experimental, especially if you do some like little packages in which you package your game with a lot of other stuff. And I also realized this, I'm researching a little bit about scene culture as well, that this has always been kind of like this kind of do-it-yourself thing, because it in a smaller, I would say, smaller editions, you have the ability to take more risks, and this is what we should do as well.
When I was in Kanzine a couple of weeks ago, the person tabling next to me, she was like literally doing some more coloring on zines she was going to sell later at that event. Like at that event, she was just like adding the colored pencil coloring to the zine. Like it's very much like
that's.
It's very dope, but I can hardly do this for myself, so I don't see myself going to any events with my stuff.
Yeah.
I rarely have the time or the energy or anything. I'm very, very used by making the stuff I do already and going to events and going around saying, hey, here, I have done something. I think it would overstrain me. I couldn't do what I would want to do then. So actually, the internet is a very practical place for distributions for the stuff that we do. And I think that sharing digital copies got some, well, it got its benefits, you know what I mean? So making USB sticks is great, it's cool. I probably would get some if I would come buy some of them, but I think it's very intense in getting people to buy them, and you don't know if they play your USB sticks. That's the other thing. Are they saying, okay, I have a novelty at hand, a USB stick with a cool rare game? Or do they say I have a cool game on a cool medium? That's two pair of shoes. Do you follow?
Yeah. No, I very intentionally have been like, no, these things are infinite print on demand. I understand the appeal of the rarity that they publish their games on, but that's usually because they're publishing on Switch and things like that, where I imagine they have to do like production runs. And when I need to make a new physical copy of Indiepocalypse, I just put a USB stick on my computer and drag a file over, and I've made it. I make them one by one. But go ahead.
Yeah, also yes. When it comes to like being demanding, I think it can also very quickly devolve into even more frustration, right? I mean, it is already, for some people at least, kind of like frustrating putting yourself out there, putting your art out there, and basically getting little to no echo.
Oh,
and sometimes I see it, especially when you go around a bigger city, that people are just like handing out stuff, especially musicians handing out their CDs, and they rarely look particularly happy with what they are getting back from the people. So yes, I think we also have to account for our own mental health and kind of like balancing out what we are doing versus what we are getting out of it.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the argument of how perfect do you want your video game to be or not.
Yeah, at events, it's like I have a difficulty. One of my difficulties with online is that like things are kind of like, everything is kind of flattened, like a like, I cannot parse what a like means, you know? But in person, it's easier to see if someone is like disinterested or very genuinely interested, which is like both unfortunate parts. Like at the one point, it's hard to tell how much someone likes it when they just click that little heart, but also you don't see all the people who would come up to your booth, be like, and then just kind of walk away.
Yeah, sure, but it also the other way around is also great. I mean, I've just listened to this story, you know, like people coming to your booth, coming back again, playing, actually playing and loving your video game.
Yes,
I see how effective this can be as well, and I think this is also one of the better things about what we are doing.
Yeah, at my local market that I'm going to in like 2 weeks, I've had people come 1 week and then bring their friends to check it out the next week or the next month.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, exactly.
And I still think about that, but I got to ask you the important Indiepocalypse question that I need to know as my
informal survey. That's all right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
How did you hear about Indiepocalypse?
I found it on the itch page. It's a prominent place, I would say.
Congratulations on that, by the way.
And I think I also flew around a bit in different communities and boards. And as I said before the show, if you search for underground games, you stumble upon each other because the scene is not that big.
It's a family. I mean, it's a large family. It's kind of like a large-ish family gathering, but it is still a family gathering. You're still kind of familiar and you realize, all right, that person over there, yes.
It's doing something similar. You have to dig a lot through different games to find each other, but the scene of playing and
developing these
underground games is not that big. And if you are honest, many things on itch are demos or small projects that people fire up and then forget around. And if you search for people who are giving energy into these kind of things, it's like a strain of underground music or experimental cinema, you're bound to stumble upon each other.
But I wouldn't knock people just uploading demos because...
No, they can do it, but it makes things hard for some other people, I think.
Yeah, but it feeds into the anxiety of, like, I only upload things once they are perfect or not. I mean, I think people should just do stuff.
It's about making things perfect. I think it's rather about caring about the stuff you made and posting it online and many, many things. So, you know, you don't play these games. I do.
Oh, Jesus.
So you have...
I resent the accusation in public.
It would say that I'm much more in contact with no budget productions. So that's what I do most time of the week. I play really, really small video games developed by one or two persons in their spare time, and I check them. And many are not that well developed. They are very small projects. It's okay that they are there. But if you're a normal video game player, they don't have any appeal for you because they are very raw concepts. And many people think, oh, I like that. I like true gaming. But if it's really bare bone and you have to dig through half-baked GUIs or non-existent menus, or not many 2 weeks ago, some guy asked me to compile his game. And it wasn't working. I was trying to play it and I said, hey, it doesn't work. And he told me, oh, compile it. And I said, okay, how do I compile it? And he said, yeah, compile the engine. There is no engine for your operating system. You have to compile it and then please play it. And I tried to do that, but it didn't work. And then I told him and he told me, work it out. Work it out, please, and upload it. And it's okay that he is asking such things, but I won't do them. And I don't know about anybody else who does this.
So we are
talking about small productions when I talk about underground and independent games, because that's what I think independence is. Independence is doing your things on your own coast in your own time. You don't get paid for it by a company, because if the company pays you, you ain't independent anymore, and you don't do it on the bank account of your wife or something.
Yeah,
that's not independence.
The other secret publisher in the independent space is the full-time working spouse. that is.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you've probably read Blood, Sweat, and Pixel, for example. I'm thinking about the Stardew Valley story, by the way. Great game. I love him, and I love the game as well. But still, yeah, it's kind of weird, right? I mean, just like being able to do this is also kind of like a privilege.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yes.
But it is
some form of funding.
Speaking of small independent games, tell me about The Vault of Minos.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, it is kind of like our first bigger project. It was also supposed to be like a, you know how it is, the 3-month pandemic project.
Ah,
we're
yes,
like,
of course.
Oh, yeah, let's see. Let's do like a very quick jump-and-run game. And suddenly, the very quick jump-and-run game that was working only with silhouettes because it has to be so simple and so on and so on, and just had to have one level, suddenly got kind of bigger because we felt like, I don't know, it was really primitive because it just felt like, all right, the jumping feels good. So we should probably do more with this kind of like jumping engine. Suddenly we had wall climbs. Suddenly we had a rudimentary story. Suddenly we had like...
Actually,
some sort of,
it was the other kind of round. I showed you that maze that I built, an auto-generated maze a little figure in it, and told you, hey, what do you think about it? And then you said, the idea is good, but the jumping is shit.
Yeah.
And we actually worked around 3 months
nice to you.
On the jumping,
alone,
but
yes.
Then the jumping felt good, and we made a small game about it, and...
it is kind of like a procedure. I mean, oh man, it sounds like rattling off keywords and keywords that I also personally sometimes like dislike in many ways. Yes, it is procedurally generated, but it is actually mostly a jump and run game, which is about, going through some weird Greek tomb fighting monsters, or fighting monsters in a very particularly pacific way, trying to Nazis to, basically trying to stop the Nazis taking over the world. And by the way, loot a lot of
coins.
Yes.
And it's procedurally generated. It absolutely is.
Yes.
But it's the kind of procedurally generation you will like.
That works. Yeah, it's a kind of like arcade.
It is fun. I had fun playtesting it myself. I'm very sure it is good. There's actually no questions about it. I made over 700 points in it. If you think it's bad, beat my score, then we can talk. You can basically get it for free, compile it yourself. All what we do is open source software, build yourself the binary, crack our demo or play the demo, because our demo is wonderful as well. It's the most beautiful demo. My demo is better than most of the games you pay for. You will enjoy this demo, you will laugh it.
I love the confidence, by the way.
Yes, no, yes. Listen, you're talking about people need that that confidence in the independent space. Sometimes it's what you need to publish something, you know?
I wish I had the confidence of my coder, by the way. The art is highly mediocre, but it's still not.
The art is wonderful. It's a work of heart. And buy something like this for money. This is the real art that someone made because he believed in it. Adrian never thought he would make a single dollar with his art, but he made it anyway.
Yeah.
And he sat there many, many hours. Actually paid more for the Steam release than we ever got in. Our game is deeply underground.
Now, you've got an elite. How much did the Steam release cost?
Exactly. I mean, but we got in the Indiecade and. Indiepocalypse.
Yes.
We got in the Indiepocalypse bundle.
Was
and
most
that is
part of our income,
and
I think.
And that paid at least like $60
US.
Definitely, yes, exactly. And this is basically the high point of our career. You know?
That's
and by the way, this podcast.
Wonderful.
But it wasn't, and excuse me to say, it was very cool,
but it wasn't
the most important game of making this game. Releasing it was absolutely great.
Yeah.
We did this because we love video games, and this is a beloved video game, and that's what I personally want to play. When I play games, I want to play games from people who believed, hey, I have a really good idea. I don't want the big corporate stuff that got chewed up again and again and again. I want creative ideas and
people that just love making games in general, yes.
And that's why I do this whole thing. I was like, I want I'm a little sicko who loves a small weird art, and I'm like, what if I just made it? You don't even have to think about it. You have to wade through the demos. I'm giving you 10 of them each month. That's the idea of like, I am bringing the weird small games that I love just to people.
Just two people.
I enjoy your lists a lot. Yeah. I enjoy your lists a lot. Every month I don't get your bundle every time, but I click through the games of your collection every month and look, okay, what are these guys? And
pretty much everybody who contributes.
We played the missionary a few weeks ago and it was so fucking good. Yeah. I basically rolled on my floor and got down and showed at Adrian.
Yes, and I loved it as well, definitely. Sorry for the F-bomb, by the way. I'm not really sure how this works. They are allowed.
What is the F-bomb? Did I do F-bomb?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. No, that wasn't intended.
Indie Apocalypse is a zine for adults or very precocious teens. I got scolded last month. I was just making my regular kind of covers or like my little rotating button that you, that is like the little button for the page.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
And the way it cropped a little bit of the breasts in it. And I got a comment of someone's like, excuse me, this has, and I was like, I guess it does. I guess technically speaking, it was one of those things where I was not expecting that, but I guess I should technically crop it, which I did.
Yeah, I mean, it is sometimes also hard to gauge. I mean, as my day job, I'm actually teaching, and sometimes I usually try to do content warnings on what I'm teaching from my students. And sometimes you're just not as aware of what should get which warning, and I also always feel bad, you know, like it's at one point you're like, okay, shit, I did this wrong, but on the other hand it's like, oh my god, you can do this wrong, you know what I mean? And I think it has been similar for you, right?
It's like some of these one of the games, Catharsis, have yet what issue it was in, I had just like a dick hanging out in the screenshot until, and it was sitting around for like, I don't know, months until someone pointed it out. I was like, oh, that is just hanging out there. I didn't even think like it. It's just kind of glazed over.
And I think it's an important part to actually, I would say, embracing also this kind of like transgressive or more transgressive quote unquote in large quotation marks. Yeah. I'm just borrowing the 40 quotation marks from earlier because I also loved this particular phrase. And for those transgressive quote unquote art, because otherwise, yes, you will never get to certain topics, towards certain topics, towards certain discourses and
what
so on. What
with underground magazines from the 80s or U-Comics, they were also very dirty. It's what counterculture is about. We can do the stuff that is morally not clean.
I would say contemporary independent culture is built on the shoulders of mountains of smut.
There's that weird thing where you find progressiveness in transgression because, like, they were publishing things that were like quote unquote unpublishable, you know.
Exactly, and it's also a way of negotiating identity, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to sexuality, especially comes also about gender and gender identity and so on and so on. How can you negotiate this properly if you just like, I would say, wall off a particular, I would say also the bodily part or the visceral part of your identity, right?
Yeah.
So yes, you have to have transgression to properly negotiate particular sorts of topics. And I feel like, especially, and I'm not that much into ranting against mainstream games as my coda actually is, because I love to play them. Oh, but I feel like, yes, especially the sheer size of them sometimes kind of like stops them from getting to the heart, to the actual heart of the matter.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are stopping a little bit short.
Yeah, I have, you know, I'm, you know, whatever, fucking king of the indie space or whatever. Kind of fucking top shit indie guy who's like, indie games, but whatever. I like big budget stuff too sometimes. Like it's about, I've said on the show before, it's not like you need to be 100%.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to sink 80 hours into Baldur's Gate. It's just true. Right.
It's not about being like, I need to be 100% indie. It's like, you have to have a balanced diet, you know?
Definitely. I have no hate for big commercial productions. One of my favorite games is Hyperhook. It's wonderful. Or FTL, Faster Than Light. I played it very, very long. It's a great big production.
Before this very show, I closed down Yakuza 6, Song of Life.
excuse me, what did you play? I'm sorry.
Before this show, I was playing Yakuza 6.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, my God, I have to get into the Yakuza series as well. But it's so daunting. It's like 8 games, right? Where do you even start? I mean, I have a backlog of 300 games
anyway. Well, here's the thing. I got to tell you, what you should start is Shenmue. I think you need it properly. That's like Yakuza 0.
Oh, yeah, I'd never finish it. Yes.
Not Yakuza 0.
I have actually Shenmue on the...
But not the crap. There's a game called Yakuza 0. That is like... the heart of what those games are is that they were like Shenmue, but
Shenmue is one of my earliest gaming dreams and desires. I mean, when the Dreamcast was coming out, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I was looking up in magazines, and there was like exactly like Shenmue as the prime game of the Dreamcast, which died too early.
Yeah,
and I never got around to it because my parents couldn't afford a console and so on and so on.
I grew up particularly poor,
but still, yes. Now I have it and I don't play it, and it's so weird sometimes how things go, right? I should get around to it.
It's a beautiful game. It's one of truly one of my if you gave me a massive budget, I'd probably just fucking make Shenmue. I just love it.
Also finish the story, right? Because I've heard it basically ended on a cliffhanger. Then they did a third one 10 years later, and then they ended that on the cliffhanger as well, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't make Shenmue because I'm not Japanese. I don't have the inroads to their culture. I'd make my American version of Shenmue.
I see. Maybe you should do a German version of Shenmue. Thunder Perfect Witchcraft Project.
Like, adopted.
Exactly. I mean, what is Shenmue, but it takes place in New England, you know, is my thought.
Trying to pay loans, I guess.
It's about the beautiful like minutia of just like everyday life and like cranking the.
You're actually in New England. That's really cool. I think you have like this Indian summer thing right now going on, right? I mean, should be around this time. Or was it in September? I kind of like get this sometimes wrong, but I feel like I've heard and I've seen also pictures that. Especially New England is particularly beautiful in early fall.
The leaves are turning, as they say. It's orange and brown everywhere. We've got the nice golden hour constantly of the way it hits the sun. New England is picturesque, you know.
Yeah. Awesome, yes.
In Germany, things get ugly in November.
Yes, and it rains all the time. It is basically very great. We actually went hiking 3 hours today, and it was great. It was great. We've got
all sorts of like, you know, the wildlife comes out, the turkeys come to roost and hang around. I mean, they're here like year round actually now.
You have wild turkeys?
Seriously? Yeah, we have wild turkeys just walking up and down the street, just hanging out.
That is absolutely adorable.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They used to just hang out around our house for a while, eating our feed, but they eat a lot of feed. Also, it's cool, but it's because of deforestation. it's a real issue for us.
Oh my God, yes.
Once when we hiked here, we saw our owl.
Yes.
I think it was a giant bird that just went across our way, and we weren't sure what we saw just before us. They are so rare in these regions.
Yes.
And it was like a mythical entity that walked across the way.
Yeah, who needs unicorns when you can have our hands, right?
And
I feel also to go back to actually indie game and game development, I feel like getting those basically getting out and trying to I think work with what you see in your everyday life is also very important.
Yeah.
Right now, and this is not a pitch. I swear it is not a pitch. just we are basically working on a game that is trying to I would say, like, articulate this particular kind of feeling, like getting out and getting out in nature, especially getting out in nature in the context of, I would say, also our own region, right? And trying to tell something that is also very particular to your own experience.
Yeah, there's a...
When I make games, I try to comprehend experiences. It's a thing that I can, and I think that's another thing that we can do as indie game developers, besides shipping Unikey boxes or making good pitches or something. I think one of the best games of these very underground productions I played in the last few months was The Universe Tastes Like Chicken. It was a really well-made game, and the developers, we had some email contact afterwards, and they are working to improve the sound and audio effects, and I test played this version, and I can really recommend to check this game out when the update comes.
Sorry, what was that game
If you
again?
Want a recommendation, game? The gameplay, it was, how do you call
game.
It?
No, the name of the game.
The universe tastes like chicken, or the solar system tastes like chicken, I think. One of these, you will find it. Tastes like chicken, universe, or solar system.
Yeah.
I think solar system. It's about a sun devouring the world and thinking about what it eats in the process. It's an interactive fiction game made with Twine. Very good experience.
It's basically about climate change, about climate collapse as well, and about like feeling... getting back to our first topic of actually doom and gloom, it is basically a game about, getting, I would say, articulating the experience of going towards some sort of like ending.
It was a result from this anti-capitalism jam. I don't know if you were aware that it happened. It was, I think, maybe 500 people made games there, all with anti-capitalist agendas, and some of the results were rather good. I don't play jam games usually, because I often wait for the developers to go over it again or something, because jam games oftentimes feel a bit...
Unfinished,
yeah. Mm. But this jam really had some interesting and good results. I can recommend to look into it if you're into underground games.
Yeah, like sometimes just like skating through, just like your itch recommends or other people's like make good use of the like your what I forget what that thing is called. Let me go there real quick. Like that itch recommends section, not itch recommends. Your feed. Just click on your feed and like,
on the user page you can see what people have in collections. Yeah, you can create public collections. And this is what you mean of
human curation, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great way to just like find a bunch of games.
Yeah, it's great. And you talked about curating and automatic algorithms before. And I think itch is one of the examples for platforms that go a bit against this trend. It's not perfect. Itch has its flaws. But a thing that it does good is to allow you to find underground and indie production.
Yeah.
Because
that is like people just like, you know, liking and curating things. It's like... it's not like the problem you run into with like, you know, traditional publications is that they want people to read them. You know, they're like they're selling a quote unquote digital magazine or such. They're like selling website traffic, basically. But a person just rating or adding a collection on itch is like just doing it for them. So you get a very pure version of that.
Yeah. And especially you get something unexpected out of it, right? Because I've heard early in this podcast, we're talking about algorithms, curation by algorithms versus curation by humans. And I tend to agree that curation is important, it is needed. I mean, my code of Valentin has actually talked about this earlier when it comes to, basically too many games that are not particularly good. But human curation is also so important because it gives you the aspect of the unexpected. And the unexpected is something that is so vital to why we do art. And it's also so vital about art as well. It is also so vital about, for example, literature. I mean, if you would just like open a book And you would already know how this is going, how this is ending. You would probably say, all right, this might have been a fun read, but it hasn't been a particularly compelling read.
Yeah.
And basically curation can work in a similar way. I mean, yeah, sure, the algorithm will just feed you with what you expect anyway, because it is your taste. But what about the beauty of just opening something up where you're not really sure, where you challenge yourself, where you find something unexpected, where you find a perspective also on video games and what video games can do and what art can do that you don't necessarily, had before.
Yeah, and if you are into games that are different from the mass market and think yourself of a creator of underground games or want to play such games, I would like to ask you to come to Lemmy and use the underground game board or use it on Mastodon as a tag, because it allows each other to find. Yeah. I think it's very important to concentrate.
To band together. Yes.
Yeah, and what we are missing right now are good places to discuss the creation and the sharing about such games.
It doesn't have to be our places per se, but just like some sort of like space, creating space, also creating expressive and creative space. And you were talking about local spaces and material spaces, and those are important, but we also need online spaces that can do just that.
Right. I think it's good to have, like, it feels strange to say, but I think it's good to also have intentionally smaller online spaces too, because I think it's if you can.
Yes, exactly.
I recently stumbled over the old web, and it's a very interesting place. Active there. There are some old web forums filled with very creative and
weird people.
People. It's great. Yes, you can find really weird and unique
personality
their art. They are doing, many of the people there are doing actively art and are creating things, and it's great to see. It's how I would like the internet to be at all. Then there are other I use Mastodon a bit or different Mastodon places, but it's hard to create a sense of community on the big social media pages. I think for what we have in mind for such niche interests, the big new social media pages aren't well fit. It's too hard to find and recognize each other because you are so stuffed with information and there are so many things and you cannot overview them all.
And like every site that has like the personal feed, I think is like very like counterintuitive to that, because it's like, oh, this is my version of it. I think everyone needs to see like that. You can't have a conversation if everyone's not seeing the same version of the conversation, you know?
The decentralized kind of like type of communication, it can work out, but at the very end you still need this classic form of like the board of the forum,
right? It lends itself to like, it makes sense, because it's not like, well, you see every statement that's said. Imagine having a conversation in real life where you can only hear two of the people out of five, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of like works like, it is very similar in a way to those people that I've mentioned before that trying to dish out their CDs in the middle of a big city.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you can get some sort of like content out of it, but you never quite get a conversation out of it, right? It's still, everything is so fast moving. There are so many people, so many conversations also at the same time, which you cannot listen over, yes. And in this regard, of course, it is important also to use maybe the platform that shall not be named on this podcast. I mean, the actual T-bomb, Twitter bomb. Well, yes. But on the other hand, yes, we need to set up those alternative spaces sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do this quickly, I think the moment that indie gaming had also in the 2010s will at some point pass.
Yeah, but the indie games in the 2010s are often over-idealized nowadays. So yesterday we looked at a Moby Games page from, what was the game called?
Oh man, Aquarius. Such a great game, by the way.
I'm sure it's good, but we were really surprised to see that how many 36
people work actually on it, yes.
Yeah, and you always have the notion it's a small production
just,
done by one or two people. Yeah. And when there was such a big team, I think the heydays of indie gaming were the early 2000s.
Oh, do you have any recommendations?
The whole FinGames scene was really, it was great. There were many small productions shared on the websites of the creators. There were also small tools of gaming and some tools that were zweckentfremdet, reshaped to make games repurposed. So in Finland, many people worked with some media presentation.
Game Maker.
It was before Game Maker. It was some scripts that they were taught in schools. Scandinavian schools taught their pupils early how to program little multimedia projects. So there were many, many young game developers with much spare time around in the early 2000s. And these
many of them had big careers.
Some of them had big careers. So I mean, the guy who made Hotline Miami started out in the scene, if I remember correctly.
The guy who made Baba is you as well, yes.
Right. And, no, I remember, probably over a decade ago, I was like telling people, like, hey, no, have you played this thing called Cactus Arcade? You know? It was like, it was that's the other thing is like all of like the 2010s indie developers that everyone knows, like they've all been around since 2000 making games. It's just people didn't know who they were. And like, that's the other.
Yeah, exactly. So you think the quote unquote indie explosion, I mean, that's a very interesting, way of looking at it. It is an explosion of popularity, not of actually people making games.
And, I mean, a lot of it is honestly just like, Microsoft Summer of Arcade and like spending a huge amount of effort to be like play Super Meat Boy in Braid, you know, that kind of
like
when you have one of the largest corporations in the world putting a lot of their effort into your game, it helps to create that kind of impression. But like
are you really independent, right? If you're Microsoft backing you, exactly.
Yeah, Meat Boy was a flash game for how long before that? You know, it's all something. You know, it all comes from something.
This entire conversation kind of like right now feels like staring into a mirror, and the mirror is staring back and looking at you intently, and he's asking, "How independent are you really?"
Yes.
All right.
But I think we're cresting over an hour here. We're kind of cruising on this show.
That's all right. I mean, thanks for being our personal soapbox.
We could go forever, and that's why I try to keep these to be a reasonable length. So I'm like,
definitely, yes.
So do you want to go on forever?
Yeah, we can absolutely do this. We have time until I think 2026 or so.
Then we definitely have to take
a vacation break at some point.
We love there, to tell people
are,
about
there are 3 hour indie podcast shows.
Let's talk about two more years about underground gaming.
So it was nice having us. Have a night, evening.
Yeah.
Play our games. They are good.
Don't go away yet. You have to tell people where you can find your stuff. We have to close the show down properly.
We almost missed the self promotion. True independent spirit.
Where can people look on your stuff on the internet?
Basically, we have a website, Thunder Perfect Witchcraft. It is like thunderperfectandwitchcraft.org. And there are links to everything that we are doing. And we are not only doing video games.
We are doing all cool stuff.
Yes.
Everything that we make is great. Check it out. And all of our stuff is free, and most of it is open. All of it is open source software. Most of it, some of it with free art. So it's basically free software. If you go by Richard Stallman, it's cool. You can download even our paid title, but then you have to compile it yourself. Or you pay for it when you get it, but most of our games are free anyway. Play them, they are good.
And if you manage to not being able to compile your game yourself on your operation system, just write to us.
Yeah, we will give you a tutorial.
Yes, we'll help you out. Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. And then for my part, you know who I am. Go to indiepocalypse.com and you buy it. It's new there. You should check it out. I recommend it. Go to indiepocalypse.com.
It's good. It's great.
Yeah, if you buy issue...
I'm good.
If you buy issue 42, eventually these people will get, like, I don't know, $6 US, which turns into, like, 5 euros or so. It can get them, like, a sandwich. It all trickles down. Royalties, they're cool things. So you can get that. You go to indiepocalypse.com/tapes, where you get the physical version. indiepocalypse.com/Patreon. If you want to subscribe, you can subscribe for a year. You get 2 months free. You get the tapes there. You can get Jessica Mission Games there. You can get physical zines. You get all the options are available for you at that platform. I'm finally like developing that ending plug voice, like the cadence. I kind of nailed it.
You nailed it. You totally nailed it.
Thank you. Valentin, Adrian, thank you for being here on the show. Thank you for making games. Thank you for the previously exited Alex for being on the show. Thank you all for listening. I should thank people for listening, shouldn't I? Should I thank people? I haven't done that.
Well, thank people for listening. I mean, they spent much time listening to our rants, combined rants. Thank you for staying with us. Thank you for being cool.
Thank you for hanging around. Thank you for listening to the show, whether you did it live or after the fact. I think about the show. I'm like, is this show fun to listen to? It's fun to be a part of it. Is it fun to listen to? The answer is still out on it. But if you're listening,
you know how it is with like friends just telling you that what you're doing is great. But what you're doing is actually great. I had a blast. Also listening to you in the first half.
Thank you. Good. Good. That's good to hear. It's good to hear after 126 episodes. What if I was a good host? One of these. Anyway, that's the show. That's why I try to end it, because a lot of times it doesn't end when I say I'm going to end it. We go on for it. We just keep talking. But thank you. I'm going to organize ways to get food. We'll be back. I'll be back next week with different guests. Look, that's another radio podcast thing. Telling people you'll be back next week. Anyway, goodbye. It's your usual ending song. See ya.